Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
Okay, Project Big Screen, episode 26, the end of March. Jeff D'Lo is not here today. He's celebrating. So I am filling in as the host, Clemmer and Ken Jack and Gooch. I always forget to promote things, so he told me to promote. Next week we kick off the first 10 of our 50 best films of the century so far, and I think it is safe to say, I'm not going to speak for anybody, that these three films we're reviewing this week will not be, I don't want to speak for anybody, Chris, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
Just missed my list, yeah.
Just missed the list, all right. Yeah, so, man. Everyone good? Anything new with you guys? Anything this week? No? Before we get to these movies?
I'll say I think this is one of the worst weeks that we've done this show, if not the worst collection of movies.
Jeff fucked me here. Because like this is like a week where I'm glad I was in a rubber room for like 3 months. Because like I would just rather talk about like the principal from Back to the Future dying for like 2 hours than talking about these fuck. I don't have a single, just people watching. This might know. I don't have a single thought about these movies. Not one interesting original thought. I don't think, but maybe you guys will. I actually think we have a good top 10 list, though. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to jump ahead an hour, we'll get there. All right. Yeah. First up, Ready or Not To, Here I Come. Everyone's been waiting for this film. America has been collectively waiting for Ready or Not To, Here I Come, since Ready or Not One ended. Am I right? Does Ready or Not To start with the end of Ready or Not, the first movie?
Yes.
Yes, right. We get that. We get caught. It's right like Rocky. There. We get caught up, which I like. Okay. Synopsis. Clemmer, go ahead. Do you have the synopsis?
I do.
Okay. Right, this is the team project today. I'm not reading
this. That's
synopsis.
Fine. This is a very long synopsis. I'm not going to read this entire thing. But moments after surviving the bloody destruction of the Ladomas family, mm-hmm. Grace McCauley is rushed to the hospital, suspected of murder. Her brief moment of safety collapses when she's attacked by another member of an elite family with the same satanic pact as the first one.
Right. Game goes on. Escalates. Nightmare. Again, tough spot for Grace. Our girl's back. Samara Weaving. Catherine Newton. Sarah Michelle's in there. What was her controversy this week?
Who?
She didn't like one of the Real Housewives.
And then the guy went nuts, right? The guy who always interviews them? What's his name?
I'm not...
It's a Cohen, right?
Andy Cohen. I don't know this world at all. Okay. So
she's still married to Freddie Prinze, though, right?
Yes.
He was a writer for the WWE for like 2 years, just like in the middle of his life. Just like there every week writing. It's strange. I don't know. Anyway, Sean Hassel, you just won an Emmy, I think, for The Pit. Yep. Elijah Wood. And of course, as always, acting in films, David Cronenberg pops up as well in Ready or Not To, one of the great directors of all time. Box office projected 9.1 million domestic opening, 95% Rotten Tomatoes, 90% audience score as well.
The Rotten Tomatoes is fake, Kirk.
Please, I know it's fake, but that was another one of my rants this week, which is, I know it's tired. It's just like, the Rotten Tomatoes scores this week, 75.
They're getting worse,
66.
Though. Everything, like, scores And if you're below 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, it's a fucking piece of shit. Like, you gotta be the biggest piece of shit in the world.
So what, sorry, let me give you the Gooch meter. So if a movie gets a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, what is it actually?
Then that's like 75% might as well be, that's a 5 out of 10. That's
you're
like
dropping
a 5
it, you're dropping 10. It, so you're dropping 25%.
Yeah, 70% seems to be like the media. If you're a and mediocre nothing, movie, you right. get into the 70s.
Like nothing has that. What's the one where it's below 60? It's not the tomato. It's the, what I mean? On the Rotten Tomatoes, it's fresh. It's a tomato. When it's not, it's like the fuck is it? Like a flower or something? Whatever. Nothing has that anymore.
Snot. They just sneeze on it.
Ready or not to, here I come. 90% audience score though. So, but the people knew what they were going. People wanted the gore and they got it. So, Clemmer, go first if you want.
I didn't mind this. I like the first one. This is definitely like a little bit of a step back. I give this like a 71. I think Samara Weaving's perfect for this kind of movie. Look, is it a creative premise? No. You know, rich people hunting somebody. And it's not even that dissimilar from the first one. Just they added a sister this time. But I think these movies are pretty well. Was it Radio Silence? It's like directing team. I think they do a pretty decent job with this. I don't know if the bad guys were, there's nothing too wildly inventive here with anyone. Maybe Sean Hattissey has the best role of the three, but even his was kind of all over the place. But Samara Weaving, relatively well shot, some good action sequences. This is fine. Like I said, a little drop of the first one, but I'm at like a 71.
I do agree. I guess I'll go in a couple from there. I do agree it's good casting, though, Ken Jack. I think she's good. Like, for the role, I think she's good. What did you think?
She's got a movie coming out soon, Over Your Dead Body with Jason Segel, which I think she's much better in this.
Okay, yeah.
And that's Yorma Tacombe directing that, the guy from Lonely Island. I think this movie's just like exactly as advertised, like pretty much the same thing as the first movie, but just more of it. And I don't think it improves on the original at all, but horror sequels, how often does that ever happen, right? Like, I feel like it's a very genre-specific thing in horror sequels where I don't feel like they're ever trying to improve, really. I feel like they're always just trying to give you more of the thing that the people want liked in the first one and to rake in more teen money, and that's all they want.
Yeah, I find the horror franchise in the long ones very often, like, they'll just stumble upon one like the fourth or fifth time and it's better than like, the second one. There's a couple of the Friday the 13th I like better. Like Friday the 13th part 4 is better than part 2, for example. But you're right, the second one generally, I don't know.
Final Destination too, Kirk.
Evil Dead 2, I think.
Jason X, obviously one of those where he goes to space.
Yeah, it's a tough scene, but hey, listen, I like it. I enjoy it. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think it's just it's fun slop for like teens, and I think that there's a level of that in every horror movie. So it's tough to have like a very like hardcore opinion on it because it's just like the same thing as the first one, just a little bit bigger in scale, and that's basically it.
So what do you give it?
I landed on a 60 for it. I'm not like over the moon over it.
Yeah, I'm at like 56. It's hard because. Am I judging it like I was struggling with the score, I guess. So am I looking at 100 out of 100 like All the President's Men is, or am I looking at 56 out of 100 for what I expect this movie to be? Am I grading this by expectation when I walk in or the quality of the film?
Quality
I struggle
of film.
With these things. Quality of film.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all right. Okay.
Even if you want to do like genre specific, I think that
expectations
works,
can change.
I just think this movie's trying. I feel it trying hard. To be a cult movie instead of organically being one. It's kind of ironically like, hey, look at us. We're going to be a movie that's going to be shown at midnight, or 20 years from now, people will be like, oh, it's like it feels orchestrated to be that. It's okay. It's plenty gory. It's what, an hour 40 maybe? You're in, you're out. Like, it's a perfectly serviceable sequel. If you like the first one, I think you like the second one. I actually think she is good. I actually like her in these movies, and I think the sequences actually are okay. But it has no, like, when we're done with this segment, I will never think about this movie again. I don't think for the rest of my life. I can't imagine ever watching it again. So if it made $9 million this weekend, is that domestic?
That's what it opened with, right?
I mean, if it gets to 20, if it gets, what's that? Oh, that's right. So if it gets to a certain, they'll probably crank out a third, right?
Got to be thinking.
You know, like, so good?
If it makes enough money.
I guess
cost nothing,
yeah.
Right?
I guess they will.
Yeah. So yeah, I would
making money.
I'll give it a 50. I'll give it a 54 because I didn't hate it. It's better than Hamnet. So I'll give it a 54. I enjoyed it more. I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed Hamlet, I will say. So
if
I'll give
they had
it
a dying kid in this, it would have brought it up another.
Or just Jesse Buckley wandering in with her mouth open in the middle of these scenes, just kind of like looking around. They should do that in every movie. It was fine. Forgettable. Unfortunately, like I said, Jeff just boned us this week because last week you have this movie that everyone's talking about. I don't know. Is anybody going to see this movie? Like regular people? I know people watching this are nuts, but like
13 regular, million as of Friday.
That's not bad. I mean, it's not terrible. Well, yeah, I guess. So what'd the first one make, Clemmer?
Make 30?
Yeah, well, so there you go. We might be done with Ready or Not, with Ready or Not 2, Here I Come. 52 for me. And I'm a little Elijah Wood
going down
at this point.
I think you've lowered it a point.
You've gone down.
The more you just kept on, you're just like, another point off, another point.
Well, Elijah Wood annoys me at this point. I don't know.
I thought he was good.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have you ever watched Wilford?
Yes.
You watched Wilford.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. He just looks a creepy-looking adult, which is okay. Yes. But yeah,
so is Macaulay Culkin. I feel like that's just a child actor thing sometimes.
That's true. So it's a 50 for me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh no, Jesus.
Yeah. We'll give it a 50.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was at, because forgettable is the word. Like, it's fine, but like you said, you're just not, no one's ever going to think about this movie again. They'll think about the original. They'll never think about this one ever. It's 30 minutes longer. It's what, 20, maybe 20 minutes longer. It doesn't blow
too bad. Is the first one
that
quick? Is that right?
The first one, I think that's why. The first one is cult because of that. Because it like literally just starts and it does it.
That's true.
It does it in a way that just movies just do not do anymore, where it just hits the ground running. Very simple premise. Hide and seek. Everyone gets it. Samara Weaving has a fucking all-time scream. I think that's the highlight of that first movie.
Yeah.
They only let her bust it out like twice in this one. It's a bit disappointing. Adding Catherine Newton into the mix did nothing for me, but it chugs along. There are some fun kills, but it's not bold enough or does anything interesting enough to, like you said, Kirk, be a cult classic 20 years from now. No one will ever watch this one. But maybe the third one. Maybe the third one will have some bigger swings.
Yeah. Once they go to space. That is the final frontier for
Tom, what do you think? Do you get excited when a great veteran director shows up in a movie like this? You know, I was so happy when David Lynch played John Ford at the end of the... It's one of my favorite scenes ever in movies. You have Steven Spielberg essentially talking to David Lynch as John Ford. Then he walks out and the John Williams music is playing and the movie ends. Like, is that how you felt when you saw Cronenberg?
I love that he's credited and he's maybe has, what, four lines? I think he's in the movie for 80 seconds.
40 seconds at the beginning. And that's it? Is the old guy at the beginning?
Let me pitch you an older Italian director playing a four-armed alien in a upcoming Star Wars movie. Does that pique your interest at all?
That is true. That is true. You do have that. I forgot about that.
Scorsese.
You know, Scorsese doing that? Who else am I forgetting? I feel like I'm forgetting somebody else, too. Wasn't Werner Herzog in one of the Jack Reacher movies?
He's in Mandalorian, too.
He's done Star Wars. Right. Yeah, I think he's... Is he one of the bad guys in that? Am I making that up? Have I lost my mind?
He's definitely a bad... He's definitely a bad guy in a movie.
I like when an old director does, you know, for some reason I get a kick out of that.
But Spielberg in Vanilla Sky.
Spielberg is in Vanilla Sky. That's true.
We need like Ridley Scott to be in one of these. I don't think I've ever heard him speak more than three words at once. I would love to see him in a movie.
Who's that?
Ridley Scott.
That's true. He's a curmudgeon too. You could cast him in something.
He would never sit in a makeup chair long enough. He'd just like somebody would try to touch his hair and he'd be like, get the fuck off me.
Why is Scorsese doing that? Yeah. What the fuck's he doing?
Get Michael Mann, too, actually.
You know what I blame for that? I hate to say this, is his dopey daughter, who I'm sure is a nice person. But it makes me sick anytime he does that thing. I've said this where he like, does that with the friggin'... I mean, Martin Scorsese should not be doing that.
Introducing a whole new generation to his films.
I suppose. Anyway, Ready or Not 2, Here I Come is not a Scorsese film. It is a... forgettable. I would say if somebody asked me to see it, I guess you guys are saying, if you want to have a good time... Essentially, it's an hour and 40 minutes. Who cares?
It's for high schoolers. Yeah. It's for high schoolers.
Yeah. That's a thing. I feel old in these movies now, too. I just feel like an old man at these things, which I am. Anyway, all right. That's first up. What's second? You guys want to do the Vaughn or you want to do the other one? Which one do you want to do second?
Clause? Let's do They Will Kill You because it's just so similar.
Isn't the same movie?
This is unbelievable.
When I talked to you on Friday, I was like, I don't want to see any of these movies. And you're like, you can just see one. You can see them both, which is, I thought you weren't telling the truth. You were telling the truth in this project. You know, this endless, like, you have to see this because there are over 1,000 screens, right?
Right.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Yeah. They Will Kill You follows Asia Reeves, an ex-convict who takes a job as a live-in housekeeper at the Virgil, a luxury. Speaking of which, I know this will annoy Jeff. I'm going off topic all the time. Why is there a there's a sequel to the one the one with what's her face Sydney Sweeney and
The housemaid.
The housemaid.
They got Kiki, baby.
So there's a sequel. So Colleen Hoover, right, took time to write a novel. She wanted to continue this story. Mm-hmm. And now and now Kirsten Dunst is the plays the Amanda Seyfried role in this one.
Oh, is that is Kirsten Dunst attached to it?
Yeah, she's attached to it. Yeah. Yeah. Is that going to be the? Are they just going to keep having her go with like really good? Like, is it just going to be like good actresses just in like 7 or 8 movies with her?
The first one made so much money; they almost have to make a sequel.
Why not?
It made so much money.
In all of her movies, how much money do you think the Colleen Hoover verse has made right now? Like, probably a decent chunk out of like the last two. Yeah, kind of
even the other two that didn't go crazy kind of have legs though. Even the one that just came out that stunk, and then the other one with the where they kept moving the thing so the guy could get the pizza. Which one was that?
And the one that's in the middle of
like,
the,
reminder to him is this one. This is the other one. Regretting the
warden in Shawshank Redemption is like the grandfather who can't stand up, and the kid makes that's a terrible movie. Regretting you.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway. So Asia gets there. The Virgil's wealthy residents are part of, guess that, a satanic cult that has maintained immortality for over a century by performing ritual human sacrifices. The building has a long history of unexplained disappearances, and Asia quickly realizes she has walked into a trap. Is this who wrote this? Is this Justin? Huh? This is how Jeff usually does it, right? Is this just AI slop? What is this?
Oh, yeah, I just asked AI for
For fucking Christ's sake. Oh. What the fuck? I don't want to do it. Fuck you. I don't want to do AI crap. Anyway, listen to this. I'm asking if it's AI, and this is the last paragraph. The film blends action, horror, and dark comedy, delivering hyper-vital. I would say it probably is AI. Runtime, 1 hour, 34 minutes. It was directed by the director of No Looking Back. Why Don't You Just Die? Who we got in here? Tom Felton, Heather Graham, Zazie Beetz. Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And pretty sure Arquette's running around too, right? Yeah. Academy Award winner.
Yes. Right?
Who gave the Academy Award the next year to Mark Rylance instead of Stallone. I mean, anytime I think of Patricia Arquette, I think of that, which breaks my heart. 4.3 million domestic opening. This movie is dead on arrival. However, the critics rave. 66% on Rotten Tomatoes. They loved it. 80% audience score, 6.4 on IMDb. Letterboxd, 3.1. Metacritic, 5.0. Gooch, go ahead if you want to kick it off.
Oh, I didn't see this one. I was out this
you
week.
Didn't?
Yeah, no,
right. You were gone, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was traveling all week. I did see it. I saw it 2 weeks ago, and it was called Ready or Not 2.
Yeah. It is remarkable, Ken Jack, from it just proves they don't get together and say, we're good. Like, let's make sure we release movies at different times. There is no coordination here whatsoever. It's kind of like, remember when they released like the two end of the world movies, the two volcano movies, like
twin films, man, they're amazing. It's really cool. I love the phenomenon. Like, what is it? Dante's Peak and Volcano.
Volcano. Yeah. Yeah. Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Ants. Bugs Life. Ants.
Yeah. Right. Ants. It's a bug. Which, you know, if these are both great, like this would be a tremendous double feature. Now they both stink. So, or they're both not great, I should say. So, but you go first. Maybe you liked it more than I did.
I liked it more than I liked Ready or Not 2, which is, I guess, kind of confusing since it is the same movie. But I think it's an interesting mix of horror and comedy, and then also like randomly being like a 70s Hong Kong action movie out of nowhere, like with the fight sequences. And like I think I liked everything in the core of it. Like the concept is interesting enough. The action's good. The humor works in spots. But it just like I wish it was more committed to being over the top. I think that would have taken this over to the next level. Of whatever quality or what have you. And some of the other things, I think just like the subplots with the daughter, with the sister and all that shit just wasn't for me. But I think I'm ending up on a 65 out of 100 for me.
65. All right. Clemmer.
Yeah. I always wondered, or at least not always wondered, but wondered recently, what would the Ready or Not movies be like without Samara Weaving? And we find out here and the answer's not very good. I'm at like a 47 here. I just thought this was like, this was just a tough watch. It felt like bad Tarantino.
Very grindhouse,
At times.
That's the problem. I mean, Tarantino has spilled over so many, which is actually even in the next movie too, and with the dialogue and some to some extent. But like, this is the problem for every, you know, I don't even know what the best Tarantino knockoff is, but for every one of those, you get 50 of these.
I mean, we got so many in the late 90s. Like, there was just, after Pulp Fiction, there was just a bunch of them. This has better fight sequences than Ready or Not 2.
I agree with that.
This has it's more gore, if that's kind of what you're going for. If you're a big fan of gore, then there's that. I'm honestly just more intrigued of, like, how this happened. Like, neither of these movies, especially this one, didn't have to come out now. You easily could have delayed this 6 months. It wasn't like Dante's Peak and Volcano, which were big-budget movies. This you could have delayed 6 months very easily. Why put this out?
But no one's going to see it 6 months from now. This is like a this is a shit burger. This has no chance at the box office. It's not like if it's released 6 months from now, people are going to flock to it.
Don't you think it has a better chance then than now? I think it has no chance.
I think they're just both like just, you know, yes. But I think this movie is, given the cast, given the release, it just feels like it's just a dump though. Like it just, they put nothing behind it too.
The immortality stuff too didn't work for me because it kind of just takes the stakes away. So, like, this just didn't click for me on any level. It didn't have the same emotional, not that Ready or Not was an emotional punch, but at least you care more. I didn't give a shit at all here. So this was, I think, a pretty big drop-off from Ready or Not 2, if you call it that, I guess.
What do you give it?
44.
What has Patricia Arquette's post-Oscar career been? Anything?
What do you call it? Severance has been obviously at the
TV, oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, but I'm saying film wise, has there been any? There's been nothing, right?
Another one, she was in Escape to Demora, but that's not movies. Yeah. But that was very good too.
Those are both Stiller projects too, right?
I think both of them were, yeah.
Yeah.
I think at least Escape on Demora on top. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah. Who she worked with a million years ago in Flurry with Disaster, which is a great movie. David O. Russell movie from the 90s. She played his wife. It's a great movie. This is not. Same. Very similar. Weird, like just I literally like basically watched both kind of almost in a row, and I was almost hallucinating. The second, I'm like, what? I was getting confused. I was like, I was thinking of the first film, watching the second. I don't know why they did this. To your point, I do think the action sequences are better. 48, I'll give it a 48. It just, again, these two movies, I would not recommend anybody go see this film. But, you know, people, I guess, will. I can't be like, who's going to go see it once this thing airs after this? No, whoever's going to see it has already seen it. Who the fuck second week's going to be going to go see this movie? Mm. Nobody, right?
I mean, nobody's seeing this the first week. So
yeah, I don't know. It's a weird, when this, what's this weekend coming? Super Mario Brothers?
Yes. And the drama.
Yeah.
Oh, the drama.
Trouble, too.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. There's a lot of shit going on with the dry leaks left and right. And this is going to be an interesting one. I'm excited for that. I was not excited for this going in. I went in with this thinking I wasn't going to like it, which is a bad move by me. It was fine. Like, whatever. 48. Better than Hamnet.
I agree.
Yeah, I liked it better than Hamnet. I did. I liked it better than Hamnet. So, but yeah, I don't suspect people are going to go flock to this one. I don't think it's going to find the audience, but yeah, I get what you're saying, Ken Jack. The action sequences I thought were pretty good.
I think the big issue when you're making a movie like that, like kind of that grindhousey-ish feel, maybe adjacent, like you need to let the characters, like the actors, give some more substance to the characters, right?
Yeah, there's nothing there.
There's nothing for any, the bad guys, the good guys, like they really just don't have a lot of, like, you need more juice. Like you need to be eccentric, and it's just, you don't get that in the movie, which I think kind of brings it down a little bit. Especially the third act is just fucking crazy. Like, really off the rails, which it's already a goofy movie, but like it goes though, I think, the one step too far with the pig head bullshit.
I like this sister better than the sister in Ready or Not too.
This sister, yeah, than Catherine Newton.
Sister,
yeah.
Better than Cat. Yeah, yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, if you gave me a quiz right now, which movie is? I think I'd get like a 30.
Well, it'd be the same quiz.
Yeah,
same movie.
I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's real. I don't know if I've ever seen two movies this similar come out. Like this, like the same month. I don't, like, even Dante's Peak of Volcano had some difference.
Well, how far apart were they released? Because it was, so Deep Impact was first, right? That was like Memorial Day, and then Armageddon was like July, right?
I remember Dante's Peak was winter. Let me see here.
Yeah.
What about No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits? Those are.
Yeah, those are very similar for sure.
How far apart were those?
I thought those were the same movie when I was a.
I'm thinking now, which one is the one with Natalie Portman?
That is No Strings Attached
with Ashton Kutcher.
Yes,
okay. I like the way you pronounce that, Kutcher.
Did I say Kutcher?
Yeah,
I golf my brain all the time.
Dante's Peak was February. Volcano was April of '97.
Yeah, April's Tommy. Volcano's Tommy Lee Jones and Ann Heche.
Correct.
Yeah, just terrible.
Oh, Mission to Mars and Red Planet. That's another good one from Twin Films.
Oh,
that's true. Yes,
same, right. 2000,
and both completely bombed.
Well, what a mess Mission to Mars is too, especially.
Yeah. Finding Nemo and Shark.
That's in the Palma one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this fall, I guess, falls in that cap. But those were all like, those aren't released in the same weekend.
Yeah. That's true.
Or like a week apart from each other or whatever. Like this is, you know.
This is crazy.
Wild. Wild. All right. So there you go. 0-2. Clemmer, walk us through the premise of Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice, if you would.
Do you want me to use the AI slop?
No.
Guess my way through it. You have a gangster played by James Marsden, who is going to be killed by Vince Vaughn playing another gangster, but there's a time travel element, and Vince Vaughn from the future ends up going to stop Vince Vaughn from the present from killing James Marsden.
I think that's about right. 1 hour, 47 minutes. This is on, what I watch on Disney Plus? Hulu?
Hulu.
Disney Plus, Hulu, Ben David Grabinski, who just did something decent.
Yeah, his last movie I remember liking.
Is he in the Scott Pilgrim world? Did he do the latest? I don't know.
He did the Scott Pilgrim animated thing, yeah.
Yes, that's him. Okay, yeah. Vince Vaughn, James Marsden, Keith David, great. Released on Hulu, Disney Plus. 77% Rotten Tomatoes, 63% audience, 6.3 IMDb, 70 Metacritic, and Letterboxd, 3.3. Vince Vaughn, I've been with him for 30 years. He's still chugging, still doing those fast-paced monologues all these years later. Gooch, you see this one?
No, you didn't. Absolutely not.
Ken Jack, you go first.
I think this one, like, there's just a lot of shit going on in this movie. A lot of shit going on. It's a lot of irons in the fire. Some stuff I think works well. Other stuff, like a lot of references in this movie, a lot of needle drops. I think some of them work, some of them don't. I think it's very much a Masters of None type thing. That's like what I felt like coming out of the movie, where I'm like, or not coming out, like sitting on the couch, whatever. But like, I watched it and I'm like, I think there's parts of this which really outweigh the total thing. Like there's randomly like that one random James Marsden like shootout scene that's like something out of John Wick, but then that's paired with like an awful 3 minute stretch of terrible jokes with Vaughn. And like, I don't know. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. I mean, all these movies, all three of these weirdly fall in like this, like they're basically the same to me. All three of them are like firm 60 to 70 range movies. They're very, very similar scores. So I'm at a 70 on Mike and Nick and Nick and whatever. Charming trio. Not a fantastic movie.
Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say, Clemmer, I actually thought the fight scenes were pretty good.
I guess.
Like, I thought they were pretty good. Like,
I didn't know where they were.
I expect. I'm probably going to be closer, oddly, to Ken Jack than your number, probably. But it seems like you were very, very down on it.
Yeah, I think I kind of hated this movie. It's aggressively stupid. It's aggressively unfunny.
Is it better than that Pets movie you saw last year, the cartoon?
Which one?
The one you went to by yourself. What was
I go to all the.
The Fox. The Fox.
Which one was it? What did you say you just saw? What?
The Pout Fish?
Pout Fish, yeah.
Like the book I used to read to my kids when they were little?
I don't know.
The Pout Fish with the Pout face to do the all over the place? That one?
Nick Offerman plays the Pout Fish.
You should absolutely be castrated if you go to that movie by yourself.
Like, I already did. I still have my genitals.
Like when they do those pictures in front of, like, you take a picture of Ryan Gosling, like there should be like a castration line where you take a picture in the movie theater. If you go see Pow Fish as an adult, with who?
I went by myself. I went to review it. It's in 1,000 screens.
With a bunch of children were there, though.
I don't know. I sit in the front row.
You sit in the front row? Which is creepier.
Yeah, jerking off.
I'm by myself. It was so boring. Terrible animation.
But why go? Other than it's playing in 1,000, like, there's no reason for you to go see that. We're never going to, other than this, never talk about it here.
I did the 1,000 screening before this show existed.
I'm pretty sure if I texted your boss and I was like, does he have to go see Pow Fish? I think he'd probably, first of all, be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then be like, I think he's okay.
No? It's an internal boss inside you, me. That
you like Pow, you like Pow Fish better than this movie?
Oh, I think I like the Pow Fish more than this movie. I do. I have it right entire. I have this below Pow Fish.
But go ahead.
It's just a very frustrating watch. This movie, the only time this movie has any life is when there's music playing. Actually, I think a pretty good like soundtrack in this.
Yeah. And Billy Joel.
This guy just wants to direct musicals. Like, correct. The only time there's any life in this movie is when people are either dancing or singing. Other than that, I just was frustrated by how much it was trying to be stupid, and that really annoyed me, and it was just so unfunny. And you raise some pretty, like you said, charming actors, Kendrick. Like James Marsden, Vince Vaughn, Keith David. Like, these are all good actors, and you just waste them.
What a tear Marsden's been on lately. I feel like he's, like, really gotten his way back into the limelight. I would say he's getting cast in a lot of good stuff. He's obviously the shining star of Paradise, which is crazy because he's not even a huge in season two. And then, like, what was it?
Sonic. Jury Duty, right?
Jury Duty, Sonic. Like, he's great. And he did the what was the Michael Keaton thing where he was just randomly in it? That was good. Knox Goes Away, was that it?
Oh, yeah. He wasn't that.
Like, he's just everything he's in. I love seeing James Marsden just effortlessly charismatic.
So I'm at a 34.
34?
Damn.
Wow, half the number. Paradise 2, Season 2 stinks. Is that right or no?
Yeah, big reason because James Marsden isn't in it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not in it.
He's barely in
it. Big flashbacks, yeah.
What does he play John F. Kennedy in? Is he John F. Kennedy in that?
Definitely.
What?
He definitely plays JFK in something.
Was that the one with Katie Holmes?
Not the butler, right? No.
It is the butler, yeah. Good call.
It is?
Yeah.
I feel like Michael C. This is Confusion Week. Michael C. Hall plays the president in something.
He does.
Is it The Crown?
I think you're right, yeah. Okay. I think you're right about that.
Okay, two Crown weeks in a row, which I like.
And The Crown guy's got the JFK show coming out.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, with Fassbender.
Yeah. Best JFK ever, Bruce Greenwood in 13 Days.
Ooh.
Better than JFK himself?
No, JFK playing himself.
You're saying the best JFK on screen?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know why he was good in that?
Canadian?
Well, I don't know. Sure. But he doesn't give you too much of the accent.
No, he doesn't.
That's the key. You can't fall into that trap. Nobody talks like that.
But you do get the accent from Costner.
Yeah, Costner's terrible in that
movie. It's such a good movie, and he just...
But also, that character in real life who Costner plays is not the hero that Costner's... Like, Costner fucking... You know, this guy, Kenny O'Donnell, is a background character. 13 Days, which I liked. And if there were 10 Best Picture nominees back then, I would have got it. Yeah, I don't... This is kind of like a Vaughn test. So, like, you know, we'll get to Vaughn. It sort of spurred my idea for the list we'll get to later. It's kind of like, do you want to go on a journey? Like, are you okay being around Vince Vaughn? Does Vince Vaughn make you uncomfortable? Like, does the monologues, the endless commercials, the fact he's kind of puffy now, he hasn't, like, grown at all. Can you sit there and listen to him do his thing? That rapid fire stuff, if it really pisses you off, you're fucking out on this movie. If you can hang with it, you're going to be okay. The time trial, to me, it's just a lot. There's a lot going on here. I think the ending is kind of crazy. I don't know if they're trying to set us up for a sequel.
Yep.
Is that, Nick
and Alice, yeah.
Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice and Mike and Nick and Nick and whatever. Like, I guess in the Hulu world, who knows if it's a hit or not? I maybe it'll get watched a lot. I have no idea. I was okay with it. I think it's a good point. The movie almost, at the beginning of the movie, you almost think you're about to watch a musical. Now, I'm like four or five, I'm like, is this just a musical? And there are a lot of, you know, there's some Billy Joel, there's some Wynwood. There's a lot of, you know, I actually like Marsden and I like Vaughn as performers, so I wanted to have a good time. It gets bogged down, though. It just sort of gets bogged down in story, where you just kind of, a few times, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And what does it want to be, you know? But ultimately, like, I didn't have a terrible time. It's funny, I kind of land the 50s all, I guess, to Ken Jack's point. It's like a 54 for me.
But isn't that the worst place to be?
Yes. Oh, yeah. 1,000%. Like,
watching a bunch of 50 out of 100 movies. Just
give me a 12 or give me what Clemmer gave, Project Hail Mary, 140. Like, one or the other. Like, yeah, this is just, you're kind of just, this is a, you're checking your phone. You're like, holy shit, like 14 minutes only passed. Like, I still got an hour to go here. Yeah. But yeah, I actually think this filmmaker might be okay in the long run, though. That's why I also thought walking like this promise here. I think this is potential.
I hope he stops writing stuff.
That was my other note too.
And like it's a terrible script.
Competently directed. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
But like, that's right to your point, Ken Jack. That was my other note. Was like the pop culture references they get dated fast when you're watching. You know. You get Gilmore Girls rants, and you've got, you know, joke here and joke there, and it's kind of like, it just kind of wears you out. But that's sort of my Tarantino point as well I was going to make about this, is sort of that he gave birth to that, though, Clemmer. Didn't exist before Tarantino. Yeah. Like, didn't exist at all, and all of a sudden, you get everyone's trying to do it. They grew up watching it, so. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, like, fine, whatever, 52. Just a mediocre fucking slate of shit thrown at us this week. Just nothing memorable. And I'm sure Super Mario Brothers 2 will definitely change that next week. I'm sure it'll be a fucking mess.
How much money do you think it makes?
I think we were talking about that in our group chat. I do agree. I can't remember who said it, but I think that'll be the top grossing movie of the year.
Very possible.
I think it has a real shot at it.
What's the projection?
Is Shrek 5 is next year, right?
Yes. Or did it get delayed, remember? They like pushed it back once. I think they're they're redoing
pushed back
the
to like 28, you're saying?
It was already a ways off. I know that.
So yeah, so I mean
the first one made $1.3 billion worldwide.
It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yes.
A little bit. I mean, obviously Nintendo's huge, but
I was at the Masters with my brother Ryan, and we wound up going to North Carolina, staying at the hotel, and it rained out that Sunday. Complete rain out. We went Friday, we're gonna watch on TV Saturday. It gets completely rained out. We're across street from a mall, our hotel, and inside the mall of the movie theater. And I said, what we're gonna do now is we're gonna do what we used to do. We're not gonna look, we're just gonna walk to the movie theater and go see a movie. Don't know what time it is, nothing. This was the first year. So we walk into the mall movie theater, and everywhere there are adults dressed like Super Mario Brothers characters. Oh, yeah. I'm too old for this phenomenon. So I was like, wow, fucking something is going on that I just missed completely. Like, this is going to be a crazy movie. So we wound up seeing Air, which I thought stunk. You're born for the ending of that, where Matt Damon's giving that stupid speech. You must have been so happy. Oh.
That's one of my favorite of the decade. I love that movie so much.
Did that make your list?
I believe it did.
Really?
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't want to speak for the list, but I'd be surprised if Air's on there. Anyway, but you're right.
It was on my list. We had to submit 75 movies.
What else? I'm trying to think what else can make $1 billion. Oh, we've talked about this. I'm just trying to think what else could even challenge.
Minions, Doomsday, right?
What's that?
Minions?
Oh, Minions Doomsday. Definitely could.
I think Odyssey has a legitimate shot.
Doomsday, yeah. Sure. I still think Spider-Man's going to be the biggest.
Yeah, Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man.
Mandalorian could make a billion. Rogue One made $1 billion.
It's a TV show.
Rogue One is Darth Vader.
I'm sorry. I think it's going to have a real hard time getting to that number. Yeah, so many people are just going to be like, I'll wait for Disney Plus.
And Rogue One had the momentum of The Force Awakens the year before, where people were like into it. It has fucking Darth Vader in it.
$165 million projected right now for Super Mario Galaxy this week, for the 3-day weekend.
If we were doing the draft, which we're not doing right now, if I had the first pick, I'd still pick Spider-Man. But yeah, like Super Mario Brothers is like the easiest lock to make $1 billion, though.
Oh yeah,
like that's gonna get $1 billion by accident, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's next week. We'll talk about that then. All right, what else we go? Where are we going next here? He wrote segment B, cinema! ! So that's where we're in segment. We're in the B block right now, Clemmer.
That's right.
Trailers. I have been waiting for years to see the Harry Potter film remade shot by shot. With a little more as a television series. And, oh my God, my expectations look like they're going to be met in this in this trailer with an all-black cast, Clemmer. I was surprised to see that. There's not a single white person in this. What is going on? I was stunned to see this. Jesus.
Sherman Helmsley as Dumbledore stunned me. I was shocked.
That was interesting casting. Yeah. I was amazed to see that. I think Bryony James will be terrific as young Harry Potter. So I'm sort of like the Super Mario Brothers. I'm too old for Harry Potter. I kind of missed it. I get why these movies mean a lot to a lot of people. I just saw the trailer. I was like, I thought it was a different story. Am I an idiot? Are they just remaking the
It's doing the same the film? Thing.
But just more, obviously, right? Obviously, it's going to be
just more because that means better, Kirk. More means better. When you're adapting something for the screen, as long as you have every line from that book.
Anybody here a big Harry Potter fan? Book reader?
Me and Ken Jack are right in the sweet spot.
So go ahead then. You guys will be better at this than I would.
We both grew up with the books. I think we're both on the same page in terms of we think the movies did about as good of a job of adapting them as you could. Because you need to cut stuff. You need to cut stuff and make it make sense in terms of pacing. And now they're just these fucking idiots that are our age. And I think in Clemmer's age group too, Gen Xers are like, well, they missed this one little part from the book or these little storylines that just do not need to be in an adaptation. So now we're here spending $30 million, probably more an episode. I don't know. It's probably way more than that. I said $30 million.
Way more than I bet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet it's $100 million an episode.
And I was hoping, maybe they'll do something different. But no, it looks the exact same except worse.
Yeah. It feels like Saved by the Bell, the new class. After Saved by the Bell ended, they brought in kind of like these other people to play basically similar characters. I feel bad for these kids because how can you live up to what the original cast did? This feels so redundant. It's just pointless. Yeah.
Tom Felton called the kids. Don't worry.
Oh, he did. Okay. Oh, good. That's good. Mr. Belding wasn't seen by the new class, though. As was
and
Screech.
So was Screech eventually.
Screech was assistant principal. Yeah.
Time for that brother to move on, man. But yeah, there are cool stories from the book. They had to cut for time. Like, you can't expand that far into a movie. But it's just like, it's not enough to like warrant this. And everything just feels like an imitation of what we liked. And I don't know. It's just, I don't get it. And also the it not being lit at all for a kid's thing. And like, I saw someone quote tweet this, it was funny. I was like, if we're looking at Christopher Columbus as being like the bastion for good cinematic, like visual style, I think we're in tough shape right now from the lighting community. Cause it's so dark. Why is it so dark and dreary and fucking desaturated? It's a kid's show. It should be colorful. You know, it's crazy to me.
So are there, again, in the books, like, could they have just gone, like, done a Harry Potter thing and gone like a different journey with these kids? Like done something completely separate?
They set up, well, not with the kids, but there are like Harry's parents have like a very clear, like they flash back to things that happened with his parents. And it's an interesting because like their parents have like a way different vibe. Like they're way more of like scoundrels and troublemakers than Harry and his friends are. That would have been interesting to do. People have asked for that. It's called Marauders. People wanted that for a while. Mm-hmm. Skipping ahead. I mean, it's like the same thing with Star Wars. It's like, why do we have to stay with these same characters when you've set up that's J.K. Rowling's strong suit. She built a very interesting world. Go play in it. Don't go back to the same exact spot and do the same exact thing.
That is one of the funny things about the Black Snape recasting is like, they've been talking about a big part of Snape's characterization is he gets the shit bullied out of him by Harry Potter's dad. And now there's going to be a whole different element to that.
That will not be happening.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to make it. And that's a very important thing to Snape's entire storyline in the book. So that's going to be it. I think you have to make some cuts there.
Didn't we just do this with Lord of the Rings? Didn't they do like a
Rings
on
power?
Amazon? Aren't they?
Oh, that's not Rings of Power.
Those are new stories. That was directionally correct. Like,
that was one on Amazon or something?
It's not very good. But that was at least directionally correct, like trying to do something unique and different. And like it was set like thousands of years before the events of the movie. So like that was at least an idea. So
there are no ideas left, of course. We say this, but like I wonder sometimes if people sit around in rooms and they just realize they can redo something. Like is somewhere like this week, will somebody be like, oh my God, Ted Danson, Tom Selleck and Steve Guttenberg are all still alive. Like, let's have them the fucking grandkid. Like, let's have them watch the grandkid. Three men and a grandbaby. Like, that's going to happen, right? No? Like, that just speak into existence?
I'm surprised they haven't tried to make Police Academy 7 or whatever they're at.
Yeah,
now.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I guarantee if you Google right now Police Academy reboot, I guarantee you somebody has... the franchise is
gonna be like Josh Gad and fucking
or the super troopers guys or something. I feel like that's like there's nothing now. I get it. Now, this is going to be. I was talking to Jeff this week, who I think would have been more positive than us. I think he seemed to not hate it. He thinks it's gonna be the most watched television property streaming of all time. He might
be gonna be, is especially coming out on Christmas too. I think that's gonna be
way forward, right? It was originally going to be next year. So, I mean, they pushed it forward.
Yeah, I do think it'll be like for HBO, like the only thing that'll rival that is like Thrones, I guess. Because like every millennial parent is going to sit and like force their kid, try to indoctrinate their kid into like the cult they had growing up. So
that's what J.K. Rowling tweets about, yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
By the way, Gutenberg did say Police Academy movie is moving forward with Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele.
Right.
This is in 2018. Well. It's not happening.
Yeah, that's the only Jordan Peele. It'd be great if Jordan Peele like just directed that. Like,
that's not happening. I can tell you that's not happening.
I mean it's gonna be an absolute monster. I think it'll be interesting to see if people, and maybe it'll be good, but you're just gonna see like generationally if people just will themselves to pretend that they like it. Looking forward, that test in December.
There's one cast member from the movies, I forget her name, some English actress, but she has like a great quotes on them where like she's like, I see people with the tattoos and like dressing up like Harry Potter, like move on. Like it was a moment in time. You were a kid. It was great. You got to move on and latch on to something new. Like you can't be carrying this weight with you forever.
Yeah. So there you go. So that comes out around Christmas time. So Harry Potter TV series news. Clemmer called this. Did you not? Jumanji?
I just said it was a problem for Jumanji, which I still don't know if they avoid the problem here. They were so
what's
Jumanji
that, Ken Jack?
No, I'm broken up about Jumanji, man. It's
well, it's not. I mean, I don't give a fuck about Jumanji. It's more just like the idea of like the business behind it. So yeah. Jumanji
this doesn't help though.
I don't think so either. Jumanji was coming out the week before Doomsday and Dune 3, which would have had a week two fall off, like you wouldn't believe. But now it's coming out the week after. So it's still fighting for the same screens. Like, I still don't understand what this does.
I think I said this to you. If it's good by Jumanji family enjoy it standard, it won't matter. Like, people will see it the second or third weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, it'll have legs if it's decent. Both of those legged out pretty well, the first two Jumanji movies. So I think it'll be fine. Like, as a franchise, like, I mean, I don't hate them. Like, they're dumb, but like, whatever. They're passable. I think it'll do fine.
Dude. It helps it comes out Christmas time, because then kids have plenty of time to see it with their parents because they're on break.
Working for something with their kids.
But like,
that's true too. There's a shitload of stuff around then.
But all the movie theaters are pissed off. They're like, why not release this in November? Like, why are you doing this? Like, it would help boost up theaters in November as opposed to the already boosted up theaters in December. That's what I don't understand.
Lowering all ships. Yeah, it's bad. Bad business.
Yeah. Although I think Dune 3 and Doomsday on the same day is, I've kind of done a 180 on this. I think it'll be fine. I think everybody who's going to those movies are going to both movies, and it's going to be like an event. Like, there's nobody who's going to see Dune 3 first weekend who is not going to. It was like, you know what? Now that I saw that, I want to see Doomsday. It's going to be fine. That's going to be fine. Jumanji probably, we'll probably get porked the first couple of weekends. That's for sure. Mm. That is true. But I'm looking forward to the further adventures of that crew, Jack Black and The Rock. And
I can't wait.
What else can they run into at this point? They introduced somebody the last movie, right? Who the hell was it? Somebody popped in at the end.
Fuck,
I forget. Nick Jonas? No, he's in all of them.
Nick Jonas is in it, right? Is he in all of them?
Yeah, I think he's in the first one too, right?
Yes.
And then when they come back, who plays him? Fuck. Oh God.
Hmm. He's like, I'm not sure. Remember we interviewed Nat Wolff and we talked to him about the Jumanji trailer, or I forget it was Nat Wolff, whichever one of the Wolff brothers was in that movie. And like we were just mentioning, like this is right after the movie came out, but it wasn't for that. And we're like, yeah, like the Jumanji trailer. We watched that, and we were like, oh no, like you're making another crappy reboot. And we really liked it. Like, you phrased it nicer than that. And he was like, people didn't like the trailer. I was like, no, like people were pissed when they saw that trailer. Like, what do you mean? Because it's remaking a beloved childhood movie.
Right. Yeah, I think those are fine. But you're right, Clemmer. There's a weird. I mean, it's going to get swallowed that weekend for sure. I mean,
I don't know why I don't release it earlier, but I don't know.
Yeah. Glenn Powell cast as Fox McCloud in Super Mario Galaxy movie. What a sentence. What a sentence. What a sentence. Glenn Powell, who is almost at this point like J.D. Salinger. You can't find him anywhere. He finally pops up and is in... who is Fox McCloud, Clemmer?
He was in... Remember Star Fox? Did you play Super Nintendo at all?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
You probably just missed it. Because that was really... Because that came out like 92. And Star Fox was like a big...
Is he going to be like a surprise in this movie this weekend or no?
I mean, you'll hear his voice. It's okay. Like Top Gun with like animals. That's what Star Fox.
Yeah. Okay, so he's a voice in this. So he's kind of like, all right. I saw the video where he jumped around the movie theater or something, and I thought,
Justin was big on this, right?
Is that right, Justin?
Oh yeah, gonna be the next big Marvel.
The next big Marvel, Nintendo. Yeah.
What is Super Mario Galaxy?
Oh yeah,
is
Nintendo.
It?
Oh yeah,
I do agree with that. I think all these stars are gonna try to jump in and get their own. Oh, everyone's going to try to lock, well, maybe not a movie, but lock down a character. Yeah, just get in on this gravy train, do one day of voice work every couple of years, cash. Just easy money.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about Glenn Powell. I'm a little worried we might lose him here in the next 5 or 6 years. I think he's teetering right now. He's teetering. We need like a good role.
Yeah.
He's in a tough spot right now.
The music one. The Southern.
Yeah, the Apatow. Apatow. But that also, Apatow's a guy who's also... been sliding.
He kind of stinks right now.
I mean, yeah,
that great tweet about Chris Rock and Will Smith, but that was like 6 years ago.
So
fun. I'll give you an interesting note here, guys. I don't know how often this happened, Clemmer. A build cast member of the number one movie of 2 years in a row, 2 years running. How often do you think that's happened?
Oh Jesus,
not often, right?
No.
I'm not saying first or second bill, but it's in, is a cast, big, significant member in the film.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of the last time it even happened.
Well, I know it happened in 85 and 86. Number one,
so
film
Tom Cruise was Top Gun.
Top Gun 1986, Back to the Future 1985. Who was in both of those films?
Oh, he just passed away.
James Tolkien passed away.
And he's also in Masters of the Universe as well.
Oh, is that right?
Is he?
The Dolph Lundgren film?
Yes. Is he in that? Okay. Super Critics. Yes, he was in that. James Tolkien. Yeah. Yes.
Passed away at 94. for, you know, I think for everybody, but for my, like, I've seen Back to the Future and Top Gun combined probably 70,000 times. So, you know, great life well lived. Look, he was pretty, I saw pictures of him. He was still at these conventions like a year ago. It seemed like he was super playful. Also, legendarily, originated the role of Dave Moss that Ed Harris played in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Really?
On Broadway. He was the first guy. And if you, if you've seen that film, which I'm sure you guys have or seen it, he would have been born to play that role.
Oh, it would have been so good.
Yeah. And I mean, just like, and he loved, I was reading that he loved, like, people would stop him on the street and he'd fucking yell at them. Like, he yelled at Martin McFly or he yelled at Maverick. So yeah, gone at 94. Good run. And,
oh, he's in War Games too. Damn.
He's in War Games. Yeah. Yes, he is. Yeah. 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 He was a good, good, steady character actor. Kind of worked forever. But yeah, he's, I would say, best known for Back to the Future.
Yeah, he's like the face of authority for the 80, for 80s movies, like, in my head. Like, that's like the authority, the man, more or less.
Yeah. I'd like to have seen him in Top Gun 2 at some point.
Yeah.
And Tom Skerritt. I would like to see Tom Skerritt at that funeral scene, ISIS funeral scene, where he kind of talks to Maverick for a moment and kind of pats him on the ass, you know?
Yeah. Tom Skerritt's still alive.
Tom Skerritt is still alive, Clemmer.
He's, well, he's what, 80?
No, he's in his 90s.
I mean, that's, yeah, some of these guys, it's wild.
Getting up there. Oh, we had other token news too.
Well, go ahead.
We, what do you call it? Lord of the Rings. There's going to be a new movie, a new Lord of the Rings movie that's going to be written, co-written by Stephen Colbert.
That's right. I mean, what the fuck is going on? Gooch, go ahead. What was that?
I mean, it's the worst fucking idea ever for a guy who's, like, long, forever prided himself as, like, kind of the face of the nerdy Lord of the Rings fandom. You would think he would have more sense of the sense than this. I've always thought he's a smart guy. This sounds like somebody, like a 5-year-old with crayons, was like, what if after Frodo and gets on the boat, then Sam goes back and looks through all their memories together? Like, whose fucking idea is this? This can't be his own idea. This can't be his own idea.
Any chance it's good? First of all,
no.
Any chance it gets made?
I don't know. You say no, but that I didn't think that Hunt for Gollum thing would be made either. Now Kate Winslet's playing Gollum. I don't know.
What? She is?
No, she's playing female co-lead in the movie, which whatever that means.
She is?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? What is happening? There are things going on that I just don't even know what's...
They got Circus directing, a well-known great director.
Yeah, but never made a bad movie.
Did you direct Venom 2 or no? Am I making that up?
Yep.
It was so bad. Sure did. And I remember me and Jeff, we went to the screening of it, and it was... Let There Be Carnage? Yeah, Let There Be Carnage. I'll never forget it because we were waiting online for it with the other, like, because it was all the nerd screening. And, like, they, first of all, one of the worst smelling theaters I've ever been in my entire life. And second of all, the guy was like, did you guys hear that Andrew's here? I'm like, who the fuck is Andrew? And he's like, Andrew Serkis. I'm like, you're the only human being on Earth that's ever referred to him as Andrew Serkis. And then the movie sucked. And then we left the theater and he was waiting at, like, the doors for everybody to come out. He's like, what'd you guys think? And we were all just like, well, see you when you talk to you tomorrow, Andy. Good.
Michelle Williams bowed out after that one. She was done.
Yeah.
I don't even understand. I don't quite know. I think Colbert has lost touch with reality, too. That's the other thing. You get your ass kissed a lot. You kind of lose connection.
Big time.
You're not appreciating the long goodbye, Kirk?
What's that?
Your long goodbye to Stephen Colbert?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, I understand. Some of these pretended to retire like 40 times. I get it.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel was on here. Let's get like we need more late night hosts. Craig Ferguson, Star Wars, I might watch. That might be something.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Oh, what have we been watching? Watching any good lately, Gooch? You've been traveling, I know.
No, not really.
Yeah.
Ken Jack?
Pitt's still good. Neighbors finale was awesome. The Born to Bowl documentary on HBO, I think, is really good. That's very fast. I don't know anything about the world of bowling, but that's been really good. And I picked up.
Is that Apatow or no?
I think it's Stiller.
Stiller. Is that okay? Stiller. Yeah. Is that good? I actually watched like five. Oh, so it's real. I thought it was like a mockumentary. I watched like 5 minutes the other night. Oh, it's real. Okay.
I thought so too, because the guy looks like Bob Ross, but apparently very real bowler.
Oh, good. I'm going to watch that.
And then I got a good trio from Barnes & Noble. They had a 50% off sale. Chinatown.
Director, Polanski.
There will be blood.
Blood.
So, good trio.
Can't go wrong with those three. Clemmer.
Robbie Fox and I did The Punisher, the 1989 Punisher this week on Super Critics. Dolph Lundgren in that. Also, Dolph Lundgren was in this time travel movie. As well, that we just saw this,
yes,
Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice. Yeah, Punisher, an odd action movie. I had never seen it. It never got an American release, but it did really well internationally. It did really well in the VHS market. And it's kind of like, in according to like Marvel fans, it's part of the canon of Punisher. But bizarre movie. So we talked about that this week.
Yeah. I watched the Jerry West documentary, The Logo. Oh. It was okay. I didn't really learn anything new. I was hoping, I've been on a little bit of a run because I actually really, it's a while ago, I actually really enjoyed the Netflix Miracle on Ice documentary. That, I don't know if you guys saw that. I was stunned that I learned new things about the fucking 1980 Olympic. Stunned. Like, I know it's a while ago, but I can't recognize. I was kind of open for that. But it's sort of the more like tortured Jerry West, like the Celtics always beating him and he got to be, it's okay. And Jerry West is kind of a grump when he was around, but it was okay. Yeah, I haven't really watched anything else. What have I watched? Have I seen anything else? I don't think so.
I saw Sorat last week, finally.
Oh, yeah.
What a crazy fucking movie that was.
Wild.
There was this like 90-year-old German man in front of me, and he's quiet the whole movie until they're like, they're driving across this cliff, and then they pan down to show like the depth of how tall, like how high up they are. And he just goes, Jesus. Little dude. And then towards the end, once people start, I won't give it away, but people start dying at some point. That's not a spoiler. And his fucking heart monitor started going off.
Really?
Like, yeah, it was like, I've never heard it like vocalized. It was like, your blood pressure is high. If you need to call a doctor, press. And then he was like scrambling.
That's going to Hulu April 6th, by the way. This Hulu's got a good crop.
I'd recommend checking it out. It's crazy. You'll know whether you're going to like it in the first like 30 minutes.
And you know what's on Netflix that I didn't realize is, which I really liked, was Blue Moon is now on Netflix, which I didn't even know. So people want to watch that. It's my probably my favorite movie of last year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that make your list?
Well, I have a preference, as you know, for short gay men who, you know, sit there and sort of spin yarns. That made my list. Yeah. I will say this without giving anything away. Should we give away anything about the list or no? Other than,
probably not.
Should I say it was number one or no?
Probably not.
Okay. I just want to make sure. That's the director I had on the most, though.
Oh.
Which makes sense. I would have never guessed it, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
No? I mean, I think? For me, anyway. I don't know.
I assume that probably is going to be like a recurring thing. I think if you have directors who like we love their specific style.
Yeah. Yeah. But I wouldn't. I just always think of like, you know, Fincher, but of course he's stuck in friggin', you know, Netflix
jail. For the last... Self-imposed jail.
Hey, LCB listeners. We're going to take a quick break for a message from one of our partners.
Mein Name ist Alexandra und ich habe GoFundMe genutzt, indem ich einen Spendenaufruf darüber gemacht habe für eine Familie. Ich wohne in der Innenstadt von Leipzig und es hat bei uns einen ganz, ganz schlimmen Brand gegeben, Wohnungsbrand, der sich über mehrere Etagen tatsächlich ausbreitete. Wir sind so ein Mehrfamilienblock und mein Freund war derjenige, der gesagt hat, ey, guck mal, hier gibt's ein Portal. GoFundMe heißt das. Dann mir angeschaut und das war dann der Startpunkt. Also was ich jetzt natürlich erreichen konnte, die Familie hat jetzt erstmal eine Notunterkunft. Die haben vorher wirklich auch in einem Hotel-Hostel gelebt, sind jetzt seit der letzten Woche in einer vorübergehenden Wohnung, haben jetzt aber die Chance gehabt, wirklich Kinderzimmer zu kaufen.
Starte deinen Spendenaufruf noch heute. In nur wenigen Minuten auf GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com für deinen Spendenaufruf. Dies ist eine bezahlte Anzeige von GoFundMe.
All right, now back to the episode.
All right, ranking. So this is, so I thought of this and I asked Clemmer about it. And so he thought it was an okay idea. If you would grab me walking out of Wedding Crashers in 2004, whatever that was, four or five, I don't remember what year it was. And said to me, like, what is the next 20 years of Vince Vaughn's career? I would say, I think we're off to the races here. Big star. Here we go. Turns out not so much. Big ups and downs, which is a big part of Hollywood history. People you thought are going to make it, don't make it. People crash and burn, come back, crash and burn again. So I don't like the word. I kind of kicked around the word, but basically, essentially, the top 10 most disappointing careers in movie history, I guess. So sort of. Who are you? Who's output are you disappointed in? Maybe it's bad luck. Maybe it's interesting choice that didn't work out. Or maybe they just fucking gave up trying. But the careers that you're most disappointed in is the topic. Based on Vince Vaughn, though, I think we'd all agree is probably not cashed in on what we thought he was going to be 20 years ago. I don't know if you agree with that, Clemmer, or not. But
I would agree 100%. Like, first time I saw Swingers and walked out, I'm like, this guy's going to be top billed in major movies for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and I thought there was, he may wind up here, but I thought there was going to be some curve. I thought he had some other pitches in his repertoire, and it turns out maybe not. So, anyway, Clemmer, you have the first pick. Who's disappointed you the most?
Yeah, my pick is Clive Owen.
Ooh, good one. That's a good pick.
Mm, That's a good one.
After Children of Men and Inside Man, this guy, and Kirk, you gave kind of three options, like, oh, bad choices. And one of the options was, like, just didn't seem to, like, give a shit. Like, just kind of stopped trying. And I feel like that's with him. Like, I feel like he stopped caring. And I just thought this was a guy I thought was going to be, obviously, James Bond was rumored forever with him. But I just thought that he was a guy that was going to be a leading man in movies moving forward for the next 10, 15 years. And he just completely dropped off. He did that TV show a little bit. But, like, other than that, like, where the hell is Clive Owen gone?
Oh, the Soderbergh one?
Yeah. Was it Delaney? Is that what
it is? No, that's a Terrence Stamp movie. The Nick?
Nick.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the last time I saw him in the movie. Oh, he was in that Daisy Ridley one, right?
Cleaner. Yes. Which wasn't even 1,000 screens. I didn't see it.
Oh, well, why would you? Yeah.
But Clive Owen, I just really thought was going to have like a pretty good to like very good career. And
you know, it was his movie that missed? That would have, I think it was the Michael Clayton follow-up for Tony Gilroy with Julia Roberts, Duplicity.
Yeah.
Is that the name of it?
Yep.
And nobody went to see it. It's not terrible. Nobody went to see it. He was on my list. I thought he was going to have he always kind of seemed like he might be Bond. And yeah, he doesn't do anything, right?
No.
Nothing.
Gemini Man? What he does is just like dead on arrival. And you know, he's in Sin City. He's an Inside Man. He's in Children of Men within a 2-year period. And then that's it. And he's good in all those movies.
He out-acts at parts Denzel Washington in Inside Man. He 1,000%. Is fucking fantastic in that movie.
He's the best I think he's the best part of Closer.
Yeah, he's great in everything. And now he's just kind of like window dressing for crappy B movies. Like he's just like, they'll cast him as like a villain for 5 lines and he gets off.
And he hasn't lost it, by the way. He's still like incredibly handsome.
Yes.
Like almost more handsome than he used to be. He's one of those guys that gets older and just like more distinguished.
Did Fiennes kind of take his like spot like in the last like 10 years? Like could he have played any of those roles? I think probably, right?
Sure. Yeah. He could have been in the menu for sure.
Bone Temple or...
That's a great shout.
I don't know if he could have been a Bone Temple. I don't know if he has that level of like fun softness. Or energy, I guess. He's always
Could he be as soft as like sort of vulnerable as Fiennes was in whatchamacallit? The Pope movie?
Conclave.
Conclave.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Turtle. Could have played that.
He could have carried that turtle.
Yes.
He played King Arthur. I forgot. That movie was a wild one.
That's another one, right? Yeah. Which kind of like you make. This is the sort of thing I always find interesting about it, is like these one or two things. They go, if Duplicity is this big hit, bam, he's got like another 5 or 6 years. But it bombs. Julia Roberts is fine because she has this long track record. Clive Owen, who the fuck is Clive Owen? Then you kind of go down a little bit, you know?
I mean, you went down so much though. Like,
no, I know.
It didn't work, but like there's not many other even like times he even went to the plate here. Like there aren't many other movies that are even worth noting here.
Yeah. Damn shame. That's a great pick.
That's a good one. I have him on my list. Ken Jack, you're up next.
I think I'll go with, and this is, there's still time for this to change, I think. I'll go with Lucas Hedges. I think Lucas Hedges, when he first made those, like, that, I think like a trio of movies that were so good, I was like, this is going to be the next guy.
Where is he now?
Nothing.
He's on stage.
Exactly. It's just, I feel like this has been a disappointing kind of like, I guess, follow up for the rest of the movies that he had made. Because like that little period of like 20... I would say like 17, 18, 19, like he was going to be the guy. And he's not. Manchester by the Sea into Lady Bird, into Three Billboards, fucking mid-90s even, Honey Boy. Like, and then it's just nothing. It's just, I don't know what he did Sorry Baby last year, but like, it's just, I feel like he was going to be on the Chalamet track or something like that. And he just wasn't. He just wasn't into it or was more into theater.
He never recovered from that movie with Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman.
Oh God.
Boy Erased?
Yeah, Boy Erased.
Boy Erased, yeah.
That was a tough one.
I struggle with when I did this, like about people who are, because he has time. Like Clive Owen, I hate to say it. Well, you never know, but I feel like he at least has time. Lucas, maybe he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Maybe some, you know, but yeah. I think he did Brokeback, right? On stage?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
But yeah, that's, so Lucas, all right, okay. Gooch, you're up.
He did that horrible movie too, Let Them All Talk, the Soderbergh one. I love Soderbergh. That was one of the worst movies I think I can remember seeing.
It was I'll give him a pass for doing a Soderbergh movie. Like, you got to do it.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah.
Improv, though. It was him and Meryl Streep. And like, that's right. On the cruise, so bad.
That was a bad one. Gooch, you're up.
Another guy who definitely still has time to turn it around, but I don't see it happening for him just based on the way he is, and that's Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill was on an all.
I like this.
Jonah Hill, all time run from the time he's really inaccepted. People immediately clock that this kid has something. He's hilarious. We have a new fat guy. And then he continues to show that he can do kind of anything you really want him to.
Two-time Oscar nominee.
Yeah, two-time in different roles. I mean, between Moneyball's much different than his role in Wolf of Wall Street, where it's loud and boisterous to really meek and reserved. And then he just kind of loses his mind, it seems like. He does this thing called Maniac with Emma Stone, which was like kind of him trying to branch out, go weirder, go bolder. It doesn't work. He makes a few more decisions like that and really just kind of quit acting altogether. And the last thing he did was You People. I think the lowest rated movie I had of 2020.
Is that the Eddie Murphy one?
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy?
That's the father-in-law, yeah.
It's a Look Who's Coming to Dinner kind of like remake.
That's the last thing he acted in? You're right. Holy fuck.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and he's got this Keanu Reeves thing this year, but I don't see him being a big part of it or that movie being very good. So his career has gone down the tube. Like, it almost doesn't exist anymore. And this is a guy who, if you'd asked me in high school, I'd been like, this is going to be one of our funniest guys. And if you asked me in college, I said, this is going to be one of our funniest guys and one of our most talented actors. And he's gone. He's gone. Completely gone.
What do you think? This is a good one. Do you think it's partially because comedy has died too? Like, you're not making 21 Jump Street anymore? Or is it just he hasn't? I guess he could be doing the studio, though.
Yes, but like him and he's so combative, it almost feels like he doesn't want to laugh anymore. Like he's dying his hair. He's bitching about the way people talk about his weight. He's like, he's just kind of stuck in a rut right now.
He's got two movies coming out this year that he directed.
Okay. So he did direct the Keanu thing.
I also don't think he's had a disappointing career. Like, he's a comedian that's been nominated for two Oscars.
I guess, but my point is, though, like I said about walking out of whatever for Vince Vaughn. Like, what you're saying, Gooch, is like if you left whatever.
You People.
Wolf of Wall Street. No, but even like Wolf of Wall Street, if I said to you, what's the next 10 years going to be like? And the next 10 years have not been great.
No, they haven't been.
I mean his last great movie was 22 Jump Street, which not everybody loves, but I love it. But 22 Jump Street in 2014.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
It's been a bad decade.
You know what, though? You're right, though. He just hasn't acted much, though. He's in True Story, which was a terrible adaptation of an okay book. He's in Hail Caesar.
He was the assistant in Don't Look Up.
And he was kind of a stupid,
yeah.
I mean, but like,
he was okay in Don't Look Up, for whatever that's worth. Like, he played that role well, I guess, if you want to give
it some. Is he not starred in anything since 22 Jump Street? Like, starred in it? Like, it theatrically released?
I mean, War Dogs in 2016, which I like. Yeah, I like it, true. But...
Even that's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's He's crazy.
Remember that? I thought that was going to be... I was like, hey, this would be goofy, weird, because it was just a bad movie.
Jesus.
And again, he's like probably 40 years old. He's got plenty of time, but I don't know what he's doing.
You don't agree really with this, Clemmer?
It all depends kind of how you want to frame it, I guess. Like, if you look at it from the last decade, he's had a horrible last decade for sure. And he's someone that I agree with, like Gooch, like he has like unlimited potential. He can do comedy, he can do drama. But like his career as a whole, though, to me, I have a hard time saying is disappointing because he's, in a lot of ways, was going. I never thought he had like a Moneyball in him before Moneyball came out. So he's kind of been on both sides of the coin, bizarrely.
All right. I'm going to go back, obviously, back in time for my two. Number four and number five. I got one later on, too. Number four, again, this is my test. If you told me walking out of diner for the first time that Mickey Rourke was going to have the career that he had, I would have said this is kind of a disappointment. I mean, this was going to be, people thought, when Diner and Pope of Greenwich Village came out, that we were looking at Marlon Brando for this generation. Did not turn out the case for the mixer. Made some bad personal decisions, had some issues. And then was given a reclamation, and was great. Should have won the Oscar. Whether you like he should have won the Academy Award that year. Mm-hmm. Sean Penn won for Milk, which was honestly a terrible performance. And then pissed it away again. And it's just, the poor guy has just obviously got some issues. But this was, if you guys have seen Diner, I assume, or no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gooch, no?
No.
You should watch it. He's great. Like, he's a movie. When you watch this movie, you're like, holy fucking, this is like a beautiful guy, a great actor. Hey, oh my God. And like, and real, just authentic, straight out of the Brando school, clearly. Pope of Greenwich Village, same. And then just got lost. Just, you know, I don't know. To me, it's kind of the great. There's a story William Goldman, the great screenwriter, wrote his second book. He goes, tells these tales about these movies. He wrote the Val Kilmer, Michael Douglas movie, Ghost in the Darkness. And he's on the set in Africa just hanging out one day. And this is when Val Kilmer is struggling with some issues at the time. And Douglas is also the producer, and he pulls him aside, and Goldman's right there, and he starts screaming at him. He's like, do you want a fucking career like Mickey Rourke? He's like, do you want to fuck this up? Like, you better learn your fucking lines. He just bitches him out. And so Mickey Rourke has almost been like a cautionary tale. Like, and he want, and Mickey Rourke, I think, was always embarrassed. He's talked about this with like the idea of, he almost found it almost like feminine to be an actor. That's why he tried to be a boxer for a while. He did all these weird things. He was dating Cario. Just a wild scene, but a great, you know, there's a deleted scene in The Thin Red Line he's in. It's
there's
on YouTube.
So many deleted scenes in that movie with so many great actors. Yeah. Oh, I'd watch the 5-hour cut of that.
The scene with him in Caviezel is unbelievable. Yep. Like, he still looks like Mickey Rourke. Obviously, he doesn't look like Mickey Rourke anymore. And as with stuff, he's lost his apartment. It's a sad story. And like, I would have guessed he would have won 2 or 3 Oscars. And, you know, I don't know which career he would have had. I don't know what great roles other people had that he would have had. But yeah, it's got to be Mickey Rourke. I don't know what you think, Clemmer, but he's way up there for me.
I remember people talking about him a lot. I kind of was too young to miss his heyday, but like I was there for kind of like the Barfly and the 9.5 Weeks.
Yeah,
I remember those movies coming out and everyone's talking up Mickey Rourke, but I kind of missed it. He is very interesting to watch when he's on, like Wrestler or Diner, but other times he just doesn't give a shit. It's just frustrating watch to me.
Yeah, what did he get post? What was his bounce post? Well, I guess he was a bad guy in Iron Man 2, right?
Iron Man, yeah.
He was good in Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
I think he was a solid villain.
Paycheck for that. So, yeah. Mickey Rourke for me. It's me again, right? Yep. Well, I go back to the... I guess, again, I like this actor a lot. But I'm going to do the same thing with Diner. I've read Rob Lowe's book about this. I read a book just came out called Stay Gold about this movie. Everybody in this cast, Macchio, Lowe, Estevez, Cruz, Swayze, the one guy they were all in awe of was Matt Dillon. They were like, this guy is just better than us. And I like Matt Dillon. I don't know why he didn't have an enormous career. Like, I don't know why he wasn't this huge star in the 80s. He just didn't want to act. Like, he just did not want to do big projects. And the way I give him credit, like, he would do, like, you know, the Gus Van Sant movies, or he'd do, you know, he would try these movies, but he was allergic to stardom, I think. And so he lost out on some roles. I think he would have been great. There's a bunch of them. Like, he's like sort of like one of these guys. If he goes IMDb page, turned down this role, turned down that role, turned down the Willis role in Pulp Fiction, which he would have been, you know, great in. Like, he just, you know, turned down role after role after role, like kind of a limited actor. Although he came in 98 with a great comedic performance in The Son About Mary. One of the great, like, I think he should have been nominated for an Oscar for that movie. Like,
he's the funniest part of that movie.
So. I think it's one of the funniest performances of all time. Like, the first time you see him, he swings around and he's got his pants unzipped right away. And he's just like, he's just a complete loser, Pat Healy.
Perfect scumbag. So good.
But even off that, like, he did that in Wild Things that year and then doesn't do anything. I just don't think he, and this is probably more a Matt Dillon thing. Like, I just don't think he's ever been interested in stardom. He seems like he's a very shy guy. Like, what do you know about him?
Nothing.
Like, not where is he right now? Like, what's he doing? What's the last thing he, like?
So I had a check, but he's in that I Play Rocky movie. I guess he is.
He plays
Storm's dad.
Plays Frank Stallone Sr., right?
Yes.
Yeah. He's back with the Farrellys.
Hot period where his brother was like getting more work than he was. Like, that's how crazy.
The irony is Kevin Dillon's become a bigger star in the culture than Matt Dillon, and he got cast because he's the younger brother of a famous star.
Exactly.
Like, it's sort of that thing, you know? So Kevin Dillon, terrific last year, of course, in Reagan. But, you know, Matt Dillon, for me, like, just one of these guys that if you know, could have played Maverick easily. Like, I'm sure he was kicked around, like, stuff like that. If he takes a right or a left, he becomes an enormous star. Now, Cruz has, like, a vulnerability he doesn't have. But it's interesting when you read about the outsiders, they're always like, Matt Dillon was just, like, the coolest guy, like, the biggest star in the room, you know. So, that'd be Matt Dillon for me. Gooch, you're up again.
This one, it might be unfair because he's had a great career, but I just do not think it lines up with his level of talent or stardom. We talked about him earlier in this podcast, and that's George Clooney. George Clooney should have one of the all-time careers. He's one of the all-time movie stars. His filmography does not line up with who he is at all or his talent level. Not even close.
Definitely he's a fucking director, that's for sure.
The things that he can get made and the things that he could be able to star in, really even up until today, he still really does have that kind of swing, it seems like. And he just continuously chooses projects that are boring. Boring nothing burgers. And he's done this for pretty much the entire 21st century outside of the Oceans franchise. There's really nothing. And Clayton, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, Michael Clayton. And Clayton. I would give him Siriana, too, as an attempt.
Yeah, but even then.
In Monuments Men, don't forget, can't.
Sure. When Clooney and Adam Sandler were crying watching that filmography at the end of Jay Kelly, you were thinking, what a fucking disappointment.
That is what highlighted it for me. I'm like sitting there watching, and they like are scraping the bottom of the barrel to fit Leatherheads on there.
Leatherheads like, in a lot. They show like 4 or 3 times.
they have to use it a lot. I'm sure Ticket to Paradise was up there. Like things like this. Like,
so kind of like post Clayton, like the last 19 years now.
Mm-hmm. Like what is the best movie since then? Descendants?
He's in Gravity. I mean,
yeah, Up in the Air.
Up in the Air's go.
Up in the Air is pretty good.
I'm not as high on that as a lot of people are. But still, this is George Clooney. And it just does not line up for me.
I think it's a good one in a way because, like, you know, I think a big part of it is his dissolution. I don't know why they never talk about it with Soderbergh. Like, he just stopped working with him. Worked with, like, you know, I don't know why he hasn't worked with him in fucking 20 years. There's that. And, like, as a director, he picks boring movies. The fucking rowing movie is the most boring movie ever made. Like, why is he doing that instead of working with, like, I don't know, whoever, some interesting young filmmaker?
I think every filmmaker alive would figure out a way to fit him in a movie. He's very easy to fit.
There's plenty of roles. There's roles for, like, an older, charming gentleman. Like, that character is in so many.
He just did one. He just did one, whether you liked it or not. He did just work with an interesting filmmaker. I mean, Bomback and like, you know, at least for him, I mean, he's playing George Clooney, but still it's something, I guess. Yeah. Like, what does he have lined up? Anything?
Nothing. I actually like this pick by Gooch. George Clooney's career as a whole, I guess you could say, is, you know, especially considering the late start he got with ER, is I guess, solid.
But we're here at the end and we're here at the end and you're looking at it and you're just like, this is not the career he should have.
There's just not a lot here. Like, and there's, and it's, there are a how lot many great, of boring. I mean,
did we do the top? We did the top 10 for him, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of
it's a good exercise because remember we were like, we're struggling at the end of that top 10.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like 7 through 10 was work.
Yeah.
The last great film he's in is.
That's Kirk. They had him in the Nicholson chair in the Oscars. They had he's
a big star.
But at some point you kind of got to ask, like, should he be? Like, should he be that, like, that level? Like, he doesn't deserve to sit in the Nicholson chair.
Look at these last five. Yeah, Ides of March, I'm not a fan of, but whatever. Last five movies he's directed: The Monuments Men, Suburbicon, The Midnight Sky, The Tender Bar, The Boys in the Boat. What the fuck?
The Tender Bar was better than I thought it would be, but everything else in that is.
But 7,000 people could have directed that, though.
Yeah.
Like, Midnight Sky was atrocious.
That was dog shit. That was
terrible. Tender Bar was not good. Affleck was good in it. I don't think the movie was good.
Yeah, I think you're probably more on with that. Yeah, that it's been tough. And he is just one of the biggest stars on the planet, like in all of celebrity. And it's just, he's got nothing in the tank, it feels like. It's almost like, it'd be fair to compare, like, it's like Trout's last like 4 years, where it's like, wow, this guy comes on the scene and he's the best thing running right now. Everyone loves him. You know, big star. And all of a sudden, it's just like, you've been gone forever.
Yeah, it's because you look at his run from like till like oh till I mean like I
out
I
of sight count. Yeah out of sight up until what
up and I mean I would say I'll give him like Ides of March, you know, that was the Descendants, that was a, you know, it was a big hit, and next year was Gravity, but even that's 14 years ago.
He was okay in Catch 22. That series was, I wanted that series to be a lot better than it was, but he was all right in it.
I'm sure he did that too. That's a good one. It kind of parallels mine in a way, if it's still there. So I like that. That's a good pick. Go ahead, Clemmer.
Is it
I'm sorry, Gooch. No, Ken Jack. I'm out of it. Go ahead, Ken Jack. Okay. You're up.
So there's a couple ones on my list where I'm like, I want to pick that person, but I don't think it works for the frame that we're doing right now, where it's like, I left the theater like wowed by them, but like, I feel like they've had giant opportunities that have been squandered. I think I'll go one, another younger person where there's plenty of time to turn it around so far. And it's Thomasin McKenzie. I think Thomasin McKenzie is an actress I watched in a few movies, right? Like she was in Leave No Trace, which she is fantastic in as a child, as like, not child, but like teen into 20s actor. Jojo Rabbit. Fantastic. And then after that, it's just nothing. And she was one of the actresses, like, I think I literally, when I went and dug up that Jesse Buckley tweet, like that was the two people. I'm like, if in 2018, I tweeted like, if there's two actresses I can put in line like to win an Oscar in the next 5-ish years, it's going to be Jesse Buckley and Thomasin McKenzie. And Thomasin McKenzie just made a lot of bad choices. She's playing like fifth leads and stuff now. Last Night in Soho was a bomb, like old Power of the Dog fucking fest. Ugh. Like, Testament to Ann Lee, which like she got in for two seconds, like, and then Fackham Hall from last year, which Clemmer, I think you
yeah, she was fine in that.
Did you like Power of the Dog, Clemmer?
I didn't, but it was like
I was with Sam Elliott on that one. Was that? Yeah. Was like all mad at Mark. That piece of shit. He was all worked up.
Yeah.
Still time, but you're right. It is weird. It's so strange how that happens. Like you just kind of just drift away. I don't know what's gonna happen.
That double thing, Leave No Trace, where it was her and Ben Foster. And Ben Foster, I think, is one of the great working actors, too. And, like, she was going toe-to-toe with him as, like, an 18, 19-year-old. And right after that, Jojo Rabbit, insanely difficult role to play, nails it. And then just all this other stuff's just been really disappointing. She's got three coming up.
Yeah, what's lined up?
She's got the Uprising, Paul Greengrass movie about the Peasants' Revolt in England in 1300s. She's got Victorian Psycho, which I don't know anything about, the Micah Monroe horror thriller movie. Like, she shouldn't be doing horror movies like this, man. Like, we gotta get this lady in some period pieces. Come on, let's go. So, yeah, I'm going to go with her. And again, plenty of time to turn around. Plenty of time.
Clemmer.
Yeah, I'm going to go with another J. Kelly star, Billy Crudup.
Good one. Yeah.
This guy, I thought, the sky was the limit. And you see it in J. Kelly. Like, you see in that small scene, you're like, this guy blows the doors off Clooney, and I don't know, it's a fantastic performance. He is so charismatic. He's so handsome. He's so, like, an intelligent actor. Like, you always feel like seems like a very smart guy. There's so much there, and it is just wasted potential. This guy's career he's in movies that are interesting at times, but, like, there's nothing, like, super memorable here, which is kind of, other than Almost Famous, which is kind of a shame.
Spotlight, he like crushed, I think.
But he's
like
good in Spotlight. Like,
but it's such a measured, tiny performance. You know, it's not his movie.
So. Kind of kicked off this second career for him, too, where he's kind of playing role like that. Like, he's big on The Morning Show, right? He's won some Emmys for that and stuff like that.
What was the movie with him and Pitt where they, like, he kills the pedophile guy? It was Kevin Bacon.
Sleepers.
Which I love.
He was really good in that, too. A psychopath. Like, that was, good, great role.
What did he get so he, you know, he's kind of ready to be the next big star after, Almost Famous. What does he get? I actually like him as Steve Prefontaine, too, in the... So
3 years later, he does Big Fish.
Mm.
But he does movies in between called World Traveler and Charlotte Gray, which I honestly know.
So he didn't get, like, a big-budget, like, starring leading man role?
He's in Mission Impossible 3 3 years after that.
So he's in that...
6 years later?
That's a bad Tim Burton movie, right? The Big Fish, that one?
Big Fish. I haven't seen it. I don't know if it's bad. I've heard good things about it.
It's it's schmaltzy. You would like it.
Good Shepherd, too. Like, he's perfect for a movie like The Good Shepherd. That movie.
Oh, that's right. He's in that, too.
Yeah.
Watchmen. He bounced around. I just thought that he was going to have a monster career. And I think he's a very good actor. I feel like he's been kind of wasted. I know that he's... I don't know if he's had, like, the easiest time personally with things. He's gotten, like... dating Claire Danes when he was with Mary Louise Parker. I know there was that whole thing. So, like... That's almost sort of like trumped out of his career is like the tabloid headlines with him.
Yeah.
It looks like he's done a ton of theater. I don't know if that also has a big impact on this. Oh, he's in Morning Show, Jeff's favorite show.
Yeah, he's won like two Emmys for that or something like that.
Yeah. He did the, he was the lead voice in, I'm blanking on it. What's the fucking Ghibli movie?
Oh,
which one?
So good. The Gillian Anderson is in it too. What is? Oh my God! Why am I blanking? On it?
I could see it. I could see it though.
The Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, Princess Mononoke. Oh yeah, yes, he is. Yeah, he is the lead voice. I don't know.
But yeah, no, that's like. Yeah.
Where'd you go, Bernadette? I forgot about that movie. Damn.
Let's go. Another Keith Lampton. Yeah. Annapurna Banger.
Justice League. He did play Barry Allen's dad. Forgot about that.
Oh, yes. What are we doing here? You know, like that's tough.
22nd role. Yeah, a lot of bad stuff in the middle of this. Eat, Pray, Love. Forgot about that too. Damn.
Go ahead, Gooch.
This guy, another guy that still has time to turn it around, but I honestly don't see it. That's Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill, I think, has kind of tanked his career.
What is the performance, though? What is the performance where you're like, he's got it?
That's my thing. I just don't think
Man of Steel. Man of Steel. It's not a performance-wise. It's more of a star. I look at him and I say, that is a star if you can develop into a star. Like, he's, what, 28 in that movie? Late 20s, early 30s? He still has time to develop as an actor, and he has not at all. In fact, I'd say he's gone backwards. It seems like he becomes a worse and worse actor as time goes on, and he picks these fucking streaming projects, these streaming movies, streaming television series, and has completely tanked any viability as a movie star. He's starring as, like, the two-hander with Alan Ritchson and the Guy Ritchie movie that feels like it should be on streaming.
Yeah, those are rough. I would say that...
The way the internet talks about him, you would think that he is one of the biggest stars in the world.
Correct. But I do think that there are pictures or movies he picks which are good, like, good for him. Like, Man from U.N.C.L.E., I think he's perfect fit, right? Even in
2014.
Enola. I know, that's the problem. This is a while ago. I also think Enola Holmes, I think he's solid in. It's just the rest of the stuff. Like, Ungentlemanly Warfare.
He's not a good actor.
I don't think I would ever...
I don't think you have to be a good actor to be a great star.
No, definitely
great movie
not.
Star.
Yeah.
And I think that was always going to be his lane.
But there is a thing, though, that makes you, like, obviously Clint Eastwood's not going to play a bunch of different roles, but he's a great movie star. John Wayne was a great movie star. I don't know if he has that, whatever that thing is, though.
It was probably being, like, an espionage player, and he has not chosen anything espionage outside of Uncle.
Right, yeah.
Sorry, Argyle.
Mission Impossible
2. Yeah. Argyle, that's right. Jesus.
Yeah, never mind. I'm very much standing by this pick. I forgot about Argyle.
Argyle's a tough scene.
He's in Argyle for all of 20 seconds. I'm going to give him the pass on that one. I would also say he was great in Fallout. He was a really good villain in Mission Impossible Fallout. But that's more being in the gravity of Cruise than probably anything.
No, and apparently that he did show up very committed for that. And that's always the story with him. People always say he shows up committed, and then just he shows up committed for these terrible things, these terrible choices. Why are you doing the Witcher series?
Yeah.
Well, why are you doing the Warhammer series?
I appreciate that for him being a fan and wanting to do things, but then like kind of getting mired in the studio muck, which I feel like has kind of happened. But I never thought Witcher was that great to begin with, regardless of whatever the issues happened with the later seasons. But I appreciate him at least trying. Like, I want to, there's a property I personally love a lot and I want to bring to the screen. I appreciate that. Maybe he's not always the right guy to do it. But he does have the Highlander reboot coming up soon, which I think if they play that right and they lean into it, the goofiness of it, I think that could be a great spot for him. But I don't know. It's really.
I forgot. That'll probably end up being good because the Stahelski's doing it still, right?
Stahelski's doing it. It's him and Batista. Oh, Voltron, too. Oh, I forgot about that.
That throws a wrench in things. Batista attachment, usually.
By the way, you want to talk about a guy that could make this list? Fucking Batista, I think, could make this list easily. Yeah, watching Blade Runner 2049 and like seeing how great he was in that little spot. Name a great Batista performance outside of like fifth lead in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He was good in the Pam Anderson thing, or last Showgirl.
He was fine.
He was good in that. There's
also a ceiling to him, though, you know?
Like, I don't know what more he could do.
To me, when I do this list, like the names that we've mentioned so far, like you have hope. I mean, I get Batista like is a decent actor, but like the names we've mentioned, you think they're capable of like great things, of greatness, mm-hmm. like of being an enormous. To me, Batista was never going to be. That's why, like, I wouldn't put The Rock on this. Like, I don't really care. You know, he's pissed, but like, I don't really care about him. But Batista's of that crew is definitely the best actor. That no question.
Yeah, that would have been. But the other movies he's picked since then were to do like Stuber and like My Spy and like.
You just did one, right? Didn't we just do? Wasn't he in like a?
Oh yeah, he was
The Lost Lands.
I mean, he's in The Lost Lands.
Yeah.
But like, that's what he's like. Anything he does beyond that, I'm surprised. Like
I think he's a good actor, though.
Yeah, like my introduction to him was great acting. Like he was really good in that sequence. In
Guardians, you're right. He's good.
Yeah. So everything after that's been bad for the most part. So.
All right, I'm up, huh? Okay, last one.
Close us out.
What's that?
Does it close us out?
I kick some names around. some wild ones too, I think, in terms of stardom. Like, I actually was considering Tom Hanks for a bit by the Clooney method.
Yeah.
Which is like the last 20 years of Hanks's career has been
rough.
And again, like, this is walking out of Castaway, whether you liked it or not. I didn't like the last third. Like, this is a giant. You can't be a bigger movie star than Tom Hanks was in 2000, Clemmer. It's not possible. Come off that run.
Especially with the pedigree he had, too.
And you like, can make it. You could Oscars. Make an argument he's not made a great film since.
Like, he's really good with Mr. Rogers, I think.
Yeah, but I think that's a great film. Captain Phillips.
Road to Perdition is a great movie.
Yeah, I think it's a flawed movie. And there's somebody else in that cast who you could definitely consider as well. You know, but I decided, like, overall, the weight of his career, and he does, like, you know, I can't do it. Amy Adams, I thought about as well.
Damn.
You know, just kind of where are we right now? Like, what is going on? But I think she's gonna bounce back. I think she's gonna be okay. I do think so.
You might be able to say, like, Nicole Kidman too, honestly. Like,
yeah,
she has kind of bounced back though.
Yeah,
she's kind of in the bounce 500 back.
500 movies every year, and like maybe one of them is okay.
Yeah,
like,
she just has so much shit. It's endless. And this kind of goes, I think, to my Matt Dillon one. I just don't think he cares that much. But again, if you had told me like 88, 89, here's the next 30 years of Eddie Murphy's career, I would have said, oof, this is a waste of maybe the all-time talent, like, of my lifetime. Like, I'm dead serious about this too. Like, in terms of performing comedy, just like a rocket ship. He was like 20 years old when he broke on Saturday Night Live, and 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop and Coming to America, hit after hit, then bounces back with Nutty Professor. And then from a film perspective, really, I know he got nominated and all that stuff. You got to say, Clemmer, hugely underwhelming if you're judging him on the scale that he was at.
Oh, for
I
sure.
mean, shit.
But
shit
it's hard.
Kids movie after shit kids movie, but there is greatness there. To me, it is. He's perfectly comfortable being sort of Eddie Murphy, and that's a brand. But like, as a career, if I in 1985, you told me he was going to be doing this in 2026, I would have said nope. Like, this is sort of the point of this exercise. Like, nope. Like, not enough. Like, what's the last great film he made? Great film.
When was the last Shrek movie?
Yeah, you want to count Shrek? That's fine, I guess. But I want to see Eddie Murphy the on screen.
Like, I like Dolomite too. I wouldn't call it great.
No. Oh. No. I like the one with Steve Martin. Like, I like that. That's like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Bomb, enormous bomb after enormous bomb. You know, the guy did, like you say, he just did a movie with Jonah Hill. He did Coming to America too. Like,
did
Beverly Hills Cop was fucking awful. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. And, like, that's okay. But, like, that also means, like, you kind of didn't live up to what, you know, I thought you were going to be growing up in the 80s, which was going to be like the all-time comedy career. Like, you've got to say it's been a disappointment post, like, even I'll give you like Nutty Professor post that. You want to count Shrek? That's fine.
With a lot of comedians, though, like, comedy is a shelf life. Like, Jim Carrey, you could say where she's been the last 20 years. I think you, like, for whatever reason, you're more of a shooting star with comedy, leading man comedy, than any other role.
He hasn't even tried. Like, not really. Like, he'll do occasionally, like, he did one, was that one a couple of years ago? Mr. Something, I don't even know. But, like, he's just doesn't, you know, and he's different because he was, like, first up. Like, he was a game changer. Like, he is, Mr. to me, the biggest comedy star of all time. And just kind of fell short, ultimately. You know? I mean, whatever. I watched that documentary last year. Obviously, he's got a huge house. He seems like he's a happy guy. Even stand-up. He's like, yeah, I don't really want to fucking do it. Like, he just doesn't want to do anything. And so, that's okay. But, yeah.
He's got 18 children to look after. I think that's like movies anymore.
Yeah.
He's got another Shrek coming up. And he also is playing Inspector Clouseau in a Pink Panther adaptation, which that'll be interesting.
Christ's sakes. I mean, he's also too old to be doing that shit at this point, I think.
That's the problem. Like, what else can he pivot to now? Or even like 10 years ago.
Well, he didn't give himself a chance to do it. He didn't even really try. He didn't really dig in there, which is okay. But he just didn't. I don't think he really even wanted to. Do you?
No.
Like, I think he's just kind of like, I'll do something and I'll come and breeze by with my charm, which he can do, obviously, all day long.
Once he got the Shrek money, too, it's probably all right.
You
like,
want to count Shrek, that's, of course, that is totally, he's a huge part of that. So
it is a rare, like, voice acting performance where he completely takes over that movie and kind of takes it to insane heights.
Which speaks to his, I think, you know, enormous talent. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's insane.
Do you ever see the guy that were like Disney, I think when they made Mulan 2, they couldn't get Marty Murphy. There's a white dude that is his voice fill-in for any movie any movie that he can't make.
Oh, really?
He has a white voice fill-in that does the movies for him in his voice. It's very funny.
Jesus. But yeah, so yeah. Any other names for you guys or no?
Yeah, I had a few. Edward Norton.
Yeah.
To me,
yeah.
Was someone who's really I thought he was gonna be just gigantic. DiCaprio kinda cucked him.
He loved he loved Bob Dylan though. He was so happy when he saw him smile when he was playing that guitar. Couldn't have been happier.
Eric Bana.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good
was
one.
The guy that I thought that's would a have a bigger one. Career. And then Don Cheadle.
After yeah, we were just talking about that.
I thought was gonna have a big career, and I feel like he hasn't.
Tough.
Maybe he didn't have the opportunities. I don't know. But
yeah, tough for him. Like, I never quite a leading man, like right in between.
Right.
Yeah. But he hasn't really done great character work either, though, right?
I know. I thought, and he's so good in everything he does. And that's.
You have a TV show for a while, right? On Showtime or something?
Yeah.
Yes.
I forget what it was called. Yeah. You guys have anyone else?
I have Lohan, Lindsay Lohan. But that's like off the court stuff.
She has some issues.
Which
yeah.
kind of. But like, there was like. I mean, you watch The Parent Trap and you're like, this little girl is the greatest actress of her generation. She's going to be an absolute star. And she kind of was for a hot minute and then completely lost it. Now she's back with a new face.
Yeah.
And then really like 90% of the Marvel MCU actors who kind of joined late, they've lost their last decade. They lost a decade of their careers, which is disappointing.
Mm. Yeah, like a it's truly like a crucial decade for these people too.
You could throw like Brie Larson in that camp.
There's just like a whole generation of like stars that kind of got wiped off the slate for these movies.
When I initially put my list together, I was thinking like people who had an enormous opportunity and it didn't necessarily pan out. And like people for me, that would be the lead of every Star Wars movie ever. So like that could be Hamill, that could be Hayden Christensen, that could be Daisy Ridley. All of them put in the spotlight in the biggest IP on the planet and really have not figured out anything to make after that. Like they've not found their place in Hollywood, which is, I feel like, is kind of strange. But like you have the number one opportunity ever and it's right. not working out.
I had Carrie Fisher on my list.
Carrie Fisher would be good too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a good pick.
Yeah. I always thought with Hamill, it was funny. Like nowadays, if a movie made that much money, he would have got like 4 starring. He got nothing back then. Nothing. Like they would have just given him roles. It wouldn't have mattered. Instead, Ford got everything. But
a time cop movie he did in like the early 90s where he was like a time travel police guy. Oh, fuck, for the name of it. He had a lot of weird roles. And then voice acting, and that was it.
He also starred in The Machine with Burt Kreischer.
Yeah.
That's true. He had a couple of movies last year. Clemmer, he was the bad guy in the Stephen King
Long Walk.
He was in 2 Stephen King movies.
He was the
last
other
year.
One you love, the one where the guy's dancing Life around. Which one?
Life of Chuck.
Life of Chuck, when he's dancing around, yeah.
Which is a fantastic movie.
I had shown winning a second Oscar, but I did have Renee Zellweger, who I just feel like doesn't...
Top of the world.
Was sort of this, like, you know, after, like, Days of Confused and Jerry Maguire, I was like, wow, this is like a new... And then Chicago and Bridget Jones, but again, she's... I don't want to get, like, you know, critical, but she just kind of looks different and acts... She seems like she's just a strange... But I guess she won another Oscar. The movie stunk, but
we all love Judy. Come on.
Yeah, like I don't know what she's doing now. Like, does she do anything?
More Bridget Jones.
Right, she's doing another one, right? Or something like that. I had her as well. So yeah, it becomes like a, you know, it's funny that guy, until Pulp Fiction, like Travolta was always sort of the story. And then he kind of did it again too. So I didn't even put McConaughey there, honestly. Like he came back and then went away again.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I think he got the most out of his career though.
Did he? I mean, like,
yeah, he won an Oscar. He's Matthew McConaughey. Like, I feel like while he's a good actor, I don't know if he's like that level of greatness.
No, but I feel like he'd been like a reliable star. He just kind of isn't anymore, is he? Or is he? He's not leading
stuff that much anymore.
Yeah. So, anyway, there you go. All right. Anything else next week? So next week is what we got.
The drama. And Super Mario Brothers.
Brothers. What is going on with the drama? The director was in love with like a kid or something? Is that, did I see that?
Essay. He was talking about how he was like dating a teenager.
Okay. All right. Okay. And there's
self-incrimination.
Yeah. I don't know. And then there's it was a spoiler out there about the movie last week.
I don't want to hear it. There is one.
Okay. It was online. I'm sure you guys.
I know. I've been avoiding everything. I've so far remained spoiler free so far until.
Spoilers your life, Clement. This person wants to move to a city where there's a major league expansion team.
That's I'm going to love this movie.
That's a
this
big sport.
Great.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson. Finally. Enormous Seattle Pilots fan.
A relatable movie, yeah. Finally.
So that's any expectation level for that movie? Just kind of who the fuck knows, right?
I'm intrigued.
Me too, but I'm like,
I'm interested to see the box office. Yes. There are two people that are A-listers, but do they have the star power to carry?
Like, right.
Two.
I'm guessing an underwhelming. Like, what do you expect it to? It's not going to make 20 million. It'd be lucky to make 12.
I think if it made like 15, that'd be a good for a movie. Yeah, nobody knows what it's about. That'd be like a decent weekend for that. I mean, she's a bigger star than he is.
The selling point is just show up in season day and Robert Pattinson at this point.
I feel like she's a bigger bankable, even off Challengers, than he is probably at this point, right? To America? Or
I don't know. He's got Batman. Yeah. That's huge. Right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. All right. So just back next week and we'll review those two movies and more. We'll talk to you then.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right. Whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert-level flavor with coffee-level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, you'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee.